providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Adrian Day. And even as Adrian said on the onset of his interview, we are now very excited to be chatting with Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, also editor of the Book Report. I will include a link to Peter's site in the weekend show posting on our website. That is kereport.com. Now, Peter, we're going to start off with a quick recap of the Fed statement and Jerome Powell's press conference this week. The Fed went through with the taper announcement, and I think you can make the argument that a lot of it was priced in. We didn't see a whole lot of volatility on the back of that announcement, but you know what? The Fed has been talking about this taper for about 4, maybe 6 months now. So as well as it should be priced in, but we did see some kind of interesting moves at the tail end of the week. Before we get into individual sectors, Peter, take us through your assessment, your takeaway from the Fed statement and now the Fed starting its taper process.
Well, as you said, it was well telegraphed by the Fed, both in terms of the beginning of when they would start tapering and the process on which it will take place in terms of dollar amounts per month and therefore over an 8-month period. But what I think it reminded people of is how dovish they remain, because the Fed's idea of confronting what is a very tight labor market, as evidenced by the jobs report, where the participation rate still remains well below where it was pre-COVID, and inflation in the U.S. that's running north of 5%, the Fed's idea of handling monetary policy in the face of that is to take their balance sheet from $8.5 trillion to $9 trillion, and after they're finished, rates will still be at zero. That's the Fed's strategy right now to deal with the economic situation, which means that they are still kowtowing to the markets. They're still kowtowing to Janet Yellen and the U.S. Treasury, as the Fed is monetizing a lot of the debt issuance. And it also proves that Powell is just deathly afraid to negatively impact the economy and the demand side of the economy, because that's what federal monetary policy really only influences, is the demand side. He keeps blaming the supply side as the only reason why we're having this inflation story, but he's been pedal to the metal trying to push the demand side since, you know, early last year when COVID hit. So he's as guilty as anyone when it comes to the current inflation story. But again, to bottom on this, he's reminding all of us that he's going to be very slow, he's going to be behind the curve, and that's going to be repeated by multiple central banks around the world, particularly the Bank of England, who decided not to raise interest rates, even though the market basically put the golf ball on the tee for the Bank of England to hit it. They still decided not to, and for some reason felt it was appropriate to keep a 0.10% bank rate while UK inflation is running 4% plus. So while on one hand we are on the cusp of a global monetary tightening cycle, it's going to be a very glacial process.
Well, Peter, it's interesting because the messaging that Powell gave was, you know, at the beginning of this year was that inflation would be transitory, that much of it would be base effect, year over year issues, or some of it would be these supply chain issues, which everybody can see, like lumber or what happened with used cars because of the computer chips and new cars, etc. But there's also a lot of factors that are clearly not just transitory. And he admitted that finally and said, hey, it's sticking around longer than he thought, and it's probably going to push into next year. And so there's obviously the energy markets that are racing higher. Look what's happening with oil. That doesn't seem to be just supply chain issues. It doesn't seem to be just some truckers are not getting it. Look at food costs, which often don't factor into their inflation costs. But a lot of those have nothing to do with base effect or supply. It's just pure inflation, and it's paired with wages. And so with the jobs report today and with, you know, a look at rising wages, rising input costs, that, you know, kind of speaks to cost push inflation. Do you think the general markets are going to have a different outlook on inflation now that it's hung around longer And will that factor into how the bond markets react to this moving forward?
Well, I think right now the markets are very nonchalant about this whole inflation story, particularly the equity market that is up, I think, 16 out of 18 days, or even 15 out of 17, something like that. Now, earnings for the quarter have been pretty good, but I think that they're not appreciating that inflation and global monetary tightening in response to that is typically not a PE multiple expander, but that's exactly what we're doing here. And to your point about some of the things you pointed out with inflation not being transitory, a lot of this is deeper seated. A lot of this is many years of underinvestment, particularly in energy, where you can just only imagine that you're a CEO of an energy company and you get beaten up every single day by some ESG investor or an environmentalist, and the last thing you want to do is aggressively invest and grow your business. You're trying to, you're getting pressure to diversify your business into other things like clean energy. So you're going to see continued lack of investment in energy. I've argued that the whole concept and inventory management of just-in-time that's been a main source of deflationary pressures on the good side for decades is dead, and that companies are going to shift to a just-in-case. They're going to have more stuff on the shelves, which means that they're going to tie up more cash in inventory. That means lower inventory turns, lower, higher working capital needs, less cash flow, and likely higher prices. You look at we can talk about the transportation industry, which is a key part of all these supply disruptions. Well, there's been massive consolidation in the container shipping market over the past 5 years, where 60 to 65% of the market are controlled by five companies. You look at the trucking industry, it's a variety of different things. That's not just a COVID thing. You had 2018, 2019, a tariff-induced fight with China that led to a manufacturing recession. You had over 100 trucking companies go out of business, a lot of capacity therefore taken offline. You have this electronic logging device rule where drivers are only allowed to drive so many hours a day. You've had these enhanced drug testing rules where a lot of truck drivers are failing drug tests. So you add this all up and there are tens of thousands of truck driving jobs that aren't going filled. So this is not something that just comes back. And you mentioned, you know, used vehicles. Well, Manheim this week said that on a seasonally adjusted basis, used car prices in October were up 9.2% month over month. They're up 38% year over year. And on a non-seasonally adjusted basis, this is the first time ever in their survey, which dates back to 1997, that you saw an increase in October. Then we're shifting to housing. And we know that home prices are up 20% year over year in the U.S., and that, of course, is captured within rents, within CPI and PCE. Well, Apartment List's national report for November that came out this week showed rents up 16%+ year to date. Well, rents within CPI, they're telling us it's up about 3%. So the rent component is not even close to accurately capturing the reality with rent. Now, I do think it's going to catch up, but that means that for the next couple of quarters, you're going to see some sharp increases in the rent component of the inflation stats, which is another reason why this is not going to be so temporary.
Okay. So, Peter, I know just even by reading through the articles you've been putting out is that, yes, look, it doesn't look like inflation is going to be transitory or temporary. And there are a number of different factors to point to as to why inflation is going to stick around at these generally higher levels. When it comes to the markets, though, it doesn't seem like investors have that same belief. So my question to you is, what's it going to take for investors to actually start believing that inflation is going to stick around longer? And how does that directly play into the markets or any other sectors?
Well, it'll certainly be another few months of surprise increases in the inflation stats. You even take the bond market reaction after this jobs report, and we're seeing another flattening of the yield curve, which is implying that while long rates are going down, that is counterintuitively because if you think there's higher inflation, but on the other hand, the market is trading on the belief that
you get these jobs numbers in the context of this inflation story, well, the Fed may have to even increase the speed at which they're tapering and gets us closer to eventual rate hikes. Therefore, that's going to slow the economy. Therefore, you should be flattening the curve. So I think that, and you can have to fast forward another quarter to see the inflation story continuing with respect to corporate earnings. At least this quarter, some companies have had success in passing it on, and people are comfortable with margins. But if you now start to see an acceleration in wages, and at some point, consumers are not necessarily going to want these to absorb these higher prices, and that's when margins really get squeezed. So I think we're sort of playing a game of chicken here in terms of the equity market and credit markets with this inflation story, with Fed tightening. I mean, when you with the benefit of hindsight, when you look back to when QE really started in the U.S. in late 08, early 09, which sort of marked the bottom of that bear market, and you fast forward since, markets did great when rates were zero and QE was going, and markets always ran into trouble when rates were going up and QE was either ending or being tapered. And this time around, it is a global monetary tightening that we are on the cusp of. So at some point, we're going to hit a wall. When that is, I don't know. But now that a lot of this tightening is now upon us, I think just people should just be on guard. Now, I mentioned the Bank of England earlier not hiking this week as it was widely expected, but they're going to hike in December instead. Why they waited a month, I don't know. But they're still going to hike. And the ECB, their emergency purchase program, which is still ongoing, even though that emergency is far in the rearview mirror, that will continue, but only for a few more months. So the Bank of Canada, as you guys know, obviously ending QE cold turkey, the Reserve Bank of Australia walking away from yield curve control, and the short-term interest rate in Australia, the market-driven interest rate, the two-year, the three-year, spiked like you've never seen, where the two-year went from 4 basis points in August to 85 basis points as of last week. So we're reaching some real inflection points here that I think many in the markets are sort of just whistling by.
Well, Peter, you bring up an interesting point because it is a global tightening cycle and all central banks have to face this. But do you think there's going to be a point where the general markets realize next year in 2022, as they keep tapering, as they take $15 billion a month out of the quantitative easing, which astonishingly was supposed to be an emergency measure from that 2008-2009 great financial crisis that we're still, you know, people are still addicted to that monetary heroin, as they say. And as they pull that away and as they pull that bond purchasing away, do you think there's a point where either A, the Fed's going to get stuck where they can't taper any further and they don't get all the way through the program if there's a market tantrum, or B, when they finally get ready to start hiking and in the U.S. and when the Fed finally says, okay, we're going to try to normalize interest rates, is there a point where the emperor's wearing no clothes and when people realize, wow, they're just never really going to be able to get interest rates up even close to where inflation is? Could that be a moment where the bond market responds, where the precious metals market responds?
Well, to your first question, which sort of spills into the second, is yes, the Fed and other central banks will reach a fork in the road, and that fork will be driven by inflation that's remaining sticky and persistent, but the markets start to fall, credit spreads start to widen in response to their tightening. So what do they respond to? Are they going to try to save the market because they're worried about the tightening of financial conditions, or are they going to focus on inflation? We know the market is what the Fed mostly focuses on, but if CPI is still printing 4-5% when they reach that fork, that's going to be a really difficult situation to be in. But I think they're headed in that direction. But because they are most likely not going to be focusing on inflation, that's when you're going to be getting real rates that that are going to continue to fall, and that will be bullish for the precious metals.
So, Peter, let's talk about the precious metals then, because it's been a frustrating year for precious metals bulls looking at the inflation data and seeing low interest rates and, unfortunately, seeing the precious metals prices pretty consistently fall and the stocks fall. So, look, there is a disconnect there between the narrative that precious metals bulls have heard over the last over decades now and with what the data is showing. Why has there been such a big disconnect? And it sounds like you're on board with saying that precious metals should go through a nice price appreciation when, I guess, the market and investors wake up to this fact that inflation is going to be around for a while.
I think that after a great 2020 where silver was up 42%, gold was up north of 20, that this year you had a very sharp increase in interest rates in the first quarter. So that helped to slow down that rally. And then as the year progressed, it was either two things. One, the market actually believed Powell in his view that inflation was transitory. So why should I own gold and silver? Because Powell is always right. And when people realize that he's wrong and that it's taper time, well, if the Fed's tapering and tightening, I don't want to own gold and silver. So it was a mid-June FOMC meeting when Powell finally said, yes, we are now talking about when we are going to taper. And if you look at a chart in gold, gold was trading around $1,900 before that and sold off hard, days after that meeting when he talked about it. And now it is finally beginning to recover what it lost in those days after that mid-June FOMC meeting, because people are realizing that tapering is no way to deal with inflation. They're going to go very slow. And even when it's done, as I said, rates are still going to be at zero. People also have to remember that when Janet Yellen first started raising interest rates for the first time in 7 years in December 2015, that marked the exact bottom within a day of that, multi-year gold bear market.
Yeah, Peter, it's interesting that it seems counterintuitive to some, but often when they start hiking while the negative, when the real rates are still negative, it actually can underpin a nice move in the precious metals, just like it did in the 1970s when they were hiking into a negative real rate environment. How do you think the rest of the commodity
and
sector?
And the mid-2000s. Oh, and the mid-2000s. Greenspan took the Fed funds rate from 1 to 5+, and gold doubled in that time frame.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the middle of 2022 when they decide to start hiking here. But how do you think the rest of the commodity cycle, the rest of the commodity sector will respond to this? The base metals have had a nice run. A lot of the agricultural products have had a nice run. Do you think energy, same thing? Do you think we'll keep seeing that in that rate hiking environment, or how will the rest of the commodities fare?
Well, I think at some point things will break when as the deeper we get into this tightening, as they always do. That's just what happened. We have a global economy. We have global markets that are medicated on easy money. And at some point, when you start to take away that punch bowl, well, there's an eventual hangover. It's always the case because lunch is not free here. And considering how extreme monetary policy has gone into one end, it may not take much to pull it back to have a response. So while from a supply-demand standpoint, I can argue that commodities are going to go higher, particularly oil and gas prices, where I wouldn't be surprised if you saw $100 WTI and $7, $8 natural gas. I don't know how they're going to respond if the markets really tank. I'm not sure. Copper, great long-term fundamentals, but I think right now it's trading off what's going on in the Chinese property market and the assumption that construction of residential buildings in China is the main driver of copper, even though we know we are sort of transitioning towards other major uses of copper that will basically take the baton from the Chinese construction industry. So while I think that we're in a commodity bull market that still has time to go, from a trading perspective, I'm just uncertain how it's going to respond as we get deeper into this monetary tightening.
So, Peter, playing this all out and looking actually at the stocks within the sectors, within the metals and commodities sector, it's been interesting because even as, say, copper has been trading close to some all-time highs at some elevated levels, even the oil stocks, they've kind of all lagged the higher metals prices. And even just recently in the precious metals sector, because of higher costs and generally a little bit lower metals prices throughout this year, now even the majors produce some, unfortunately, weak numbers, financial results in Q3. This doesn't draw more investors into those sectors, though. And when we look at it from an investment angle, everyone wants to make money and everyone seems to be making money in sectors outside of commodities. What's going to change that?
Yeah, it's pretty depressing to be watching the party going on from the outside and not having a ticket. And you kind of feel like that owning a bunch of these stocks. I think a lot of that has to do with, well, mining in particular is just a tough business. But I think once people transition to the belief that, you know what, maybe this is not transitory. Maybe oil prices are going to stay high for a while. Maybe gold at 1800, when all in sustainable costs for many of these companies are less than 1000, that's a pretty fat margin. And why am I pricing these companies at either below book or best, you know, 1 or 1.2, 1.3 times NAV, that maybe we should go back to how we used to price these, and that was 2 times. And that's when you get doubles and triples in some of these stocks. But I think people have to believe in the sustainability of that commodity price. And that's just not yet. Again, because we are entering a tightening cycle and people just have this knee-jerk response of, oh, do I want to own gold and silver in that kind of environment, even though history has shown, yes, you do, because they're tightening in response to inflation. And you know what? Inflation is the most widespread since the 1970s. So this is going to actually be a much different cycle of tightening than we've seen over the past, you know, 10 plus years, coming off zero rates, coming off QE. This is more unusual. And because of this high inflation, it limits the flexibility by a tremendous amount of these central banks. So we talked about reaching that fork in the road. Well, if inflation was low, then they wouldn't hit that fork in the road. They would just go back to just bailing out the stock market. But because of this inflation situation not going away, and because of Main Street actually getting really pissed off about this, the Fed's not going to just be able to easily pivot and back away just to save stocks if that inflation story is still high, if gasoline prices are still high, and so on and so forth.
Well, Peter, just to Corey's point that, you know, that people are making money in a lot of different sectors, we are seeing some pretty big moves in the tech sector again. We're seeing a lot of the markets come back to life and go roaring higher. Almost every month for the last couple of years, we've seen markets make new highs. Valuations are stretched on a historical method, and it doesn't seem to bother people that a stock like Tesla represents a market cap that's larger than the other 14 auto vehicle companies, for example, or that some of these cryptocurrencies are racing to levels that we really are in the unknown spectrums, or that the meme stocks have continued to pile high to new levels that people can't imagine. Look at the move we saw in Avis Carbonyl just this week, for example, where it went up several 100%. Do you think there's a point next year or in the near future where the generalist markets or where some of these hot sectors get their trees shaken, and that we do have a moment of pause where there's a little bit more focus back on valuation again? Or is this a runaway train that just can't be stopped?
Well, valuations don't matter until they do. But when they typically do, it is when earnings growth starts to slow and or you get monetary tightening. And we're, of course, entering that monetary tightening side of it, where I gave the analogy years ago that QE and zero rates puts beer goggles on investors and it makes everything look good. And it doesn't matter what valuation you will pay, 20 times sales, 30 times sales, who cares? Doesn't matter. But when that tide of money starts to recede, those goggles start to clear up and people start to see things for what they are. And I think that's when investors become more sensitive to high valuations and more discriminating in what they buy. And that people to keep in mind that you go from a 30 multiple to a 20 with no change in the underlying business or revenues or earnings. Well, that's a 33% decline in the stock just on a change in the multiple. So I do think, and getting back to my thought that the market's way too nonchalant here with the Fed and this global monetary tightening we're entering, is at some point we will reach a valuation gut check. But certainly with the market, the NASDAQ up 10 days in a row, we haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, it really seems like, I guess we're just waiting for the market to wake up to the fact that inflation's sticking around and that the Fed might not have the control to get it under control, but that can last a long time. We've seen this before, right? Is that markets can stay almost irrational for longer than the data tells you that they should be able to, but hey, it was an interesting week having Powell go through and the Fed go through with the taper and seeing some of the market moves being mostly, muted because it was mostly priced in. But for the precious metals bulls, encouraging to see gold at least appreciating the last couple days of trading this week. Peter, great having you on the show. I always enjoy our conversations and I really appreciate you taking some time to share your thoughts on these markets and make sense of all this data that we really get bombarded with week after week. Again, Peter is the editor of the book Report, which I will link to in that weekend show posting. Peter, thank you as always for your time. Everybody, thank you for tuning in to this weekend show. Please go back through our website throughout the week and listen to all the daily editorials and all the company updates that we recorded. And please keep in touch, flex@kereport.com and chat@kereport.com. We love hearing from all of you. Peter, everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.